Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with your host, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Jay Larkins. Jay is the founder, CEO, and the self-proclaimed mastermind of Dry Flower. We're going to get into all that. So thanks for joining us today, Jay.
Hey, what's up, Maynard? Thanks for having me, man. Stoked to be here.
No, pleasure's all mine. I mean, you know, it's been great. I think we've been circling around for a while. You know, we've been schmoozing, talking, and had a lot of good vibes. So happy to finally have you on the show. And today we're going to be talking about a lot of great stuff, right? I mean, you have an amazing background, an amazing story that we're going to be talking about, you know, and talk about some fun stories and anecdotes as well of that along the way. And also, of course, you know, you've been doing this for the last 30 years. So you have extensive cultivation, harvesting experience. We'll get into kind of the ins and outs of all that and talk about how that's all culminated into Dry Flower and the revolutionary system you guys developed over there.
Right on.
Yeah. So right, I guess, you know, before we get into all the fun stuff, heavy stuff, whatever you want to call it, I always like to keep it easy, right? So let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
Right on, man. So I'm coming to you from Ashland, Oregon. You know, after 30 years in the weed game, this is where I've ended up. And it's been a wild ride, you know, as you mentioned a couple things, but it's been crazy to get here so far. And I'm just feeling blessed up to be where I'm at, man. And yeah, super stoked to get on this, this podcast today.
Appreciate it. So Ashland, Oregon, I mean, now it's kind of, a great place to be, obviously, in the regulated market, right? But I mean, you obviously have your background in the legacy market, as do I, right? And so talk to me, right, before we get into kind of that transition from the legacy to the regulatory market. First, talk to me about, you know, your experience, you know, talk to me about those, you know, the beginning of Jay, you know, with cannabis and kind of how it's kind of led to what you're doing today.
Yeah, man. I'll never forget one of the first bags I bought. I had to have my mom drive me over to the guy's house because I was only 15. And I was like, oh, mom, I left my shirt over at, homie's house. And she's like, that's your brother's friend. What do you mean? How'd your shirt get to your brother's friend's house? He's, you know, 3 years older. I'm like, oh, we were skateboarding outside, blah, blah, blah. Runs me over there. I run in and get a, you know, quarter ounce of some brick weed swag. And, you know, that's where, that's really where it all started already. You know, that necessity to that need to be deceitful, even with my mom, you know, because I wanted to get into that weed and it was illegal. So I couldn't tell her what was up and I certainly couldn't walk there either. So, oh my gosh. You know, that's kind of where that all started. And, yeah, just my love for smoking started then, even on that swag bud that was, you know, garbage. But that took me close to God right away. And so I already knew that was where I wanted to be.
And where was this? So, I mean, now you're in Ashland, but where were you when that first experience and kind of where you grew up a little bit?
So that first experience, that was down in Valencia, California. I think I was 15 then. My dad had just retired at age 10 when I was 10. So I was all over the world until I was 10. I was living in Germany, born in Hawaii. Lived back east, lived in Virginia and Louisiana and on and on. But yeah, he retired when I was 10 and we settled in Valencia. So once I hit 15, got into that herb and life changed, man. Until I got into the herb, I wanted to be in the military. I was set to go to West Point. I was going to go to, you know, I want to be a general, right? I was all into it. And then when I got into that weed, I, you know, started getting into the weed and psychedelics. And I saw real quick, like, you know what? I don't want to kill people. I don't like that. That doesn't feel good. And so that's, you know, that really steered my course. You know, the cannabis has really steered me in life since I got into it and guided me, you know, to where I am now, which is, you know, guided every moment. And I've been guided every moment to get to where I'm at now. Blessed. I'm just sitting here blessed. Sitting here blessed in Ashland in the hub, you know, one of the hubs of the West Coast, you know, cannabis scenes. You know, this is such a huge spot to be. It's the perfect spot for me based on, you know, the hang harvesting system that I brought to market right now. And it's just been a wild struggle, ups and downs and running from the feds and, you know, 7 children to date, you know, 4 with my ex-wife. I've got 3 children, my beautiful wife now. And just loving it, dude. Loving it. So it's been a wild ride. It's been a wild ass ride.
No. Yeah. I mean, you know, looking at that, right. So starting off there and kind of having those ambitions of being, you know, being in the army and kind of that whole other side, right. And your story, I think kind of what, I know speaking about myself, right. I kind of felt like I was not necessarily alone. Right. I mean, cause we have a whole culture, we have a whole kind of, you know, built in, you know, friends and everything like that going on just based on cannabis. Right. Which has been really good.
Right.
But that being said, right. Like, you know, you mentioned kind of the deceiving a little bit right off the bat, right. Kind of having to hide everything. And, you know, your story is not unique. It's, you know, sounds like you're speaking here and it sounds exactly like me, you know, growing up and having to, not too far there. You know, I'm from the Valley, you're from Valencia. You know, cruising up and down the coast, you know, to pick up, but how it kind of escalated, right? It started as just, you know, having, you know, I remember 420, 2001, right? I think, you know, I think 10 years younger than you, right? So 420, 2001, freshman in high school and kind of that first, just getting a first gram, right? And you get ripped off and then you get more and this and that. And then, how can I smoke for free kind of thing, right?
That's right.
And kind of leading up into it. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, your experiences and then we'll get into kind of how it's been, you know, transitioning from having to hide it to being in front. So talk to me about some of those experiences, right? You know, some more of those, like how things went up and going up north and picking stuff up and all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah. Well, you already know it starts with wanting to smoke weed, right? You're smoking weed and then you're like, I want to smoke for free.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the beginning, my ambition was
entrepreneurship kicking in, you know, it's like,
right? I just want my free ounce, dude. I just want an ounce for free. I just want my own ounce to smoke, you know, my own ounce of Kind Bud, which then was probably $400 an ounce, you know, ballpark. You know, I think pounds were 4,800. I paid 53 one time in a pinch, you know, so that was back in, you know, 95, 96, 97, somewhere in there. Yeah. But it was, so it started with smoking and just wanting to get free smoke. And then that turned into, you know, driving to Santa Cruz, where I had a buddy from high school that had some packs. So I was going up there and getting a pound or getting a few pounds or getting, you know, whatever you could and bringing that back. And then one thing leads to another. Next thing you know, you're doing bales of, you're doing brick weed, you're doing 50 packs of brick weed and truckloads. And then next thing you know, you're driving excursions across town full of bales, 1,000 pounds in a bale across Tucson, just trying to get that dollar, dude. And really, you know, once you get into the cannabis scene, you understand that cannabis it's not bad. You know, there's bad shit that happens, man. I got robbed at gunpoint twice in my life, you know, went on the run from the feds for 10 years. So there is chaos that comes from it, but the weed itself isn't bad. It's the energy, you know, that people bring to it that, you know, the greed of wanting more money, the greed of wanting to, you know, other things, that's really where the negativity is. It's not in the cannabis. You know, the cannabis, you know, brings you inside. When you smoke cannabis, it brings you inside. You know, the lust for it for money, that's a different thing. You know, but, you know, really, I've never lusted for money over cannabis. I've just, you know, I have several children. I got to feed them. So, you know, for me, it's been a necessity of, it's just been a way of life. You know, I smoke it. And ultimately hustling it, going, you know, doing those runs to Santa Cruz and then Bellingham, doing BC Bud, and then down to San Diego, doing Tijuana runs and Tucson and all that. You know, it's like, ultimately, you know, I got out of all that hustling and got into growing, you know, because at some point the hustle just got too much headache, you know, running around, you know, the headache of the hustle is real, man. There's money to be had, but it's work, dude. It's so much work hustling. Not that growing's any easier, but it's like, you know, when you're hustling, it's like, you've got stuff out on the fly all the time. You've got your books, you've got your, you know, what you have owed and you've got some money in hand and you're always flipping. You're always looking for that next pack to get and front these guys some and cash some out here. And it's like this 24/7 hustle. And, you know, once I got into growing, I realized, shit, dude, I want to spend my days growing plants, staying with the plants, like low stress, not worrying about being followed and watched and under surveillance and like just grow that shit. And then, you know, you're just selling that box, one box a year to live, instead of a box a week, that you're flipping every week, you know, making the same amount as if you just grew box a year. And so, you know, the transition from hustling into growing was a huge thing for me. It was a, it changed my life as far as peace of mind, you know, and the stress of, you know, feeling, paranoid, you know, of being watched. And, you know, when you're on the run, there's a whole set of paranoia that kicks. It's a whole nother set of parameters of paranoia.
Yeah, man,
it's a fucking wild ride, dude. Wild ride. And, you know, to get it all behind me now, you know, it's been years. I was, you know, I went on the run in 2002. You were just in high school then, shit. I went on the run in 2002 on that setup and, ran till 2012 when I turned myself in and, you know, got all that stuff behind me, did a little time and got probation. And, you know, when I got out, I went right back to that garden, got my card, started growing again, got back into it. You already know, you know, and, you know, that's just, it's just a way of life. You know, it's something that it's, you know, it's a culture, you know, it's a subculture. It really is a way of life. And, you know, there's just no getting away from it if you smoke weed for me, because it's my passion, you know, it's what I do. And so to have it all that dirty shit behind me, all that dirty stuff behind me, all the hustle behind me and having all that experience, the experience feels great. You know, it wasn't all fun, but having gone through it, I now have such more, you know, that hands-on experience, man. There's nothing like direct experience to give you real understanding. Right. And so here I am in this place of, you know, understanding growing and understanding smoking and understanding weed and, like, you know, really having a deep passion for it, which is how Dry Flower is able to shine. You know, it's really a, you know, we're kind of a customer service company. I mean, we don't just sell hangers and hardware, but we consult, you know, it's a, that's what we do. We consult because it's really complicated harvesting weed if you want to do it right.
Well, yeah.
And so thank God it's above board. Now we can talk about it.
Now you talked about, you know, obviously, you know, getting held at gunpoint a couple of times, running from the cops for 10 years. Right. And talking about that kind of transition from that hustle to that kind of harvesting, right? Kind of, and, you know, and kind of having a little bit slower down, everything like that, right? And obviously you guys have been able to create something really great here with, you know, with your company. So I want to get into that, but also, you know, where'd you kind of, how'd you kind of learn everything along the way, right? Was it just something that you picked up along the way? Did somebody really just take you under their wing and kind of showed you, because, you know, obviously, you know, cultivation is a whole nother subculture in and of itself.
Oh, yeah.
The culture, you know, and everybody has their theories and everybody has their techniques and everything like that. So, you know.
Yeah. Great question, man. Yeah. So I cracked my first seeds when I was, you know, probably 16, you know, right away when I started smoking that shit, I was like, found some seeds in there. I cracked those seeds. I didn't even have any idea what it took to grow and harvest a plant, but my, you know, my ambition was such that I was like, I mean, I'm going to crack this plant. I'm going to grow some weed. You know, so I got at it and, you know, failed. I didn't actually have my first successful harvest until I got out of high school. I think I was, you know, my first house out of high school, I grew a backyard crop of, like, I don't know, it was like in a little plywood box, you know, it was like in a 4x8 box that I built outside. It was kind of stashed behind this, you know, some bushes. It was kind of a weak harvest, but I maybe pulled a pound or a pound and a half out of there. It was, you know, fairly successful for the time, not a financial big, you know, big win, but it was, for personal, for grow and all that. And for experience, it was detrimental to learning that, you know, learning actually growing your own weed, actually cutting it and hanging and seeing how long it takes to dry. Like, when can you smoke it? You know, I wanted to smoke it. I wanted to cut it and smoke it right then. I didn't know I had to wait a week or 10 days or, like, it almost seemed eternity to wait 10 days on that first crop, you know, that I ever grew. So I kind of dabbled in growing a little bit my whole life since I started smoking, but I really didn't take it up professionally until I was on the run for, I think I was on the run about 5 years and I was still hustling, doing bales, you know, moving, doing all kinds of crazy shit. And a buddy of mine was like, Jay, you know, you really should start growing, dude, and stop hustling, dude. And I want to hook you up with this formula. And if you just do this, dude, you're going to be successful and it's going to be on. And I was like, well, you know, I saw other people doing medical stuff at the time. And I think this was 2006, 2007. Nah, it must have been before that, 2005 or six. And, Yeah, he essentially said, look, Jay, I'm going to hook you up. I'm going to give you a formula. You know, it's like baking a cake. Here's your formula. You're going to have your grow lights, you know, at this height. You're going to have the temperature, the daytime temperature at 84 and the nighttime temperature at 64. And here's your clone. And during clone, you're going to give it Because and Cocoa Cat and Meta Bloom and all whatever that formula was at the time. It was just it was like baking a cake. It was just like a 2-page formula. And he handed me some clones. And I had enough experience that I understood to, you know, put the plant in some dirt. And, you know, this formula even had the container size. It was like, here, take your clones, throw your clones in some 3 gallons for, you know, 2 weeks, and then put them into 7 gallons for 2 weeks, and then put them into 25s with a mix of, you know, perlite and vermiculite and this soil and these worm castings and that compost. And that was it. And it was an Oregon OMMP formula. It was one plant per light. And the setup was in Oregon, was each card gave you 6 plants. So what you did was you did one plant per light, and you try to get, you know, before the double ended, you're trying to get a pound of light. So we're trying to get 6 pounds on 6 plants, mm-hmm. right? And this formula was, it got me going, you know, and it really, I struggled a lot. Even with the formula, I struggled with overwatering, underwatering, you know, russet mites, spider mites, fucking every, not really russet mites then, but spider mites, you know, everything, man. Oh my God, growing, it wasn't that easy, but you know, it's so much fun when you hit it, you know, when you figure it out and you know those proper ratios and you can mix food up right. And you can, you know, when you get all the right numbers and it all lands, it's a great feeling. And so that was really the beginning of my professional growing days was just a little cake formula. And I was going to turn that into 6 lights, and it was scalable. Like you could do 24 lights or 48 lights or 96. You know, I started with my 6 lighter and was crushing it, you know, and then that turned into looking for a spot in, you know, Mendocino, looking for an outdoor plot that I could grow. You know, that turned into, you know, get a couple scripts and, you know, grow 25 on each script. I'm gonna grow 100 plants, keep it under the, you know, fed numbers, et cetera. You have 100 in that day. And just, you know, grew from there, you know, doing, you know, guerrilla style grows kind of in the woods, but, you know, kind of getting into that full sun, because now we had cards and we could like kind of do it legit, but still shady. You know, you really couldn't move it. You know, you couldn't grow 500 pounds and move it legit then still. You could get it. So it was like still this dirty kind of gray area where you could grow it legal, but still couldn't really, you know, put it in your account kind of thing. So, right. I mean,
still deal with that stuff a lot. Right. I mean, it's in a lot of respects as well. Right. You know, still, illegal, but still deal with a lot of bullshit, especially with banks and what you can put in and all that fun stuff.
Oh, it's man.
Cash only still, you know, but you know, that's a great story, you know, about how just kind of getting that formula and kind of having to trial and error. And I think that's kind of, you know, it's pretty common, right? You know, having big growers over here and, you know, how they talk about shit, man, I know how to do it. Now I like having, you know, dozens of people working for me and having to get
that
to do it so it comes out the same way every time, you know, it's kind of that like, you know, that McDonald's kind of thing, right? Where you want it to be the same way every time, everywhere you go kind of thing, you know, it's like shit. Yep. Having to come up with SOP.
It's hard.
You know, it's like, we're real business over here now, right? It was something that we were doing in, you know, in warehouses and hiding it and running
totally.
And, you know, all that stuff. And now it's out in the open, you know? And so, you know, talking about that from that transition, right? How'd you get from, you know, being that dude, you know, and, you know, 10 years and doing, you know, doing some time, doing a bit, and then coming to what you guys got going on now. Right. So, transition from legacy to regulatory.
Yeah. Probably like, you know, the crux of my, you know, my story really is like, you know, being a fugitive, you know, what really brought me, you know, as, you know, turning myself in was getting into Bikram yoga. And in my tenure as a fugitive, I got into Bikram and started, I went to teacher training, dude. I became a Bikram teacher. And it was at that teacher training that I said, you know what, when I'm done with this training, I'm turning myself in and I'm going to face this shit. I'm gonna get it behind me because I have purpose now. I knew I had this newfound purpose in life. And so, you know, went and turned myself in, looked at 8 years, looked at 6 years, looked at 5 years off. Finally, they offered me a deal for, you know, 6 months in county. My lawyer told me, you're taking that deal. You're, you know, end up doing only 2 months in the kitchen. So I really got off light, you know, considering, you know, everybody else in the story. So once I got off, you know, turned myself in, got on probation, came back here to Oregon, you know, I had kids out here with my ex-wife, and really started teaching yoga. You know, as soon as I got out of jail, I couldn't go grow, and I had to have a job. I had to be legit, and I had to be above board. So, you know, what was I doing? I taught yoga full time, man. That's all I did. You know, and even when I was waiting to go to jail back in Ohio, I was, you know, I was 16 months that I had to go turn myself in and wait there and live there and integrate into society while I was waiting to go to trial. All I did was teach yoga. So, you know, that I had to go to the judge and say, hey, you know, I'm competing in yoga. I made the state championships. I'm going to, can I have permission to travel to New York for the, you know, the national championships? And she's like, oh, of course you can. So it's kind of a funny spot. You know, I was like, you know, waiting to go to trial on smuggling charges, you know, and at the same time, I'm teaching yoga and the judge is giving me permission to compete for the, you know, the Oregon State Championship and, you know, represent the state and, you know, in New York. And so, you know, it was really kind of funny. You know, I didn't really fit the profile of a, you know, quote unquote drug dealer, you know, that they've seen or that you see, you know, really, because I'm a family man and I'm just not that guy. And so the transition, you know, I came out of jail, started teaching yoga and, you know, was reporting to probation, did all that. And after a year of probation, even though I had 3 years, at a year of probation, the judge cut me loose. And she said, you know what? This is silly. You go teach yoga, you go do your life, you go live. And she set me free. So as soon as she set me free, I got my card, started growing again, got right back in. Even though I was teaching yoga now, I had this new purpose, right? So I was now finally for the first time, somewhat above board, right? My whole life, hustling dirty, hustling weed, can't tell anybody what I'm doing, can't tell them about my money, you know, and then on the run for 10 years, you know, so turning myself in was just a huge thing. And I attribute it fully to yoga, fully to Bikram yoga. That changed my life, fully changed my life. And I knew at, you know, in that training that when I got out, I was going to open a studio. And that was my purpose, is to do that, not just to hustle hangers and sell weed and do all that, but to really share this gift that I found and transform other people's lives in the way I've been transformed. I mean, it gave me the power to go and look at 8 years and face it and say, you know what? I'm not afraid. God's in control, man. I'm blessed. I'm going to go face this 8 years. And if I got to go to jail, that's my purpose. I'm doing it. I'm not afraid. And that's the, you know, that's part of the conviction. That's part of the confidence that I got from that yoga. It's really powerful stuff. And so integrating that, you know, coming above board, teaching yoga, still and still growing medical because I love to do it. And I've still got to eat, you know, because really yoga doesn't pay the bills, but it's a lifestyle. So, yeah, you know,
that's the whole thing. I mean, that's the real depth right there, right? Like that's a lot of depth in there, just in those statements, right? In terms of feeling dirty, right? You know, feeling less than, all these kind of, you know, emotional, mental kind of things, right? And how that affects us and how we present ourselves to the world and how we go forward into it and how we make the choices that we make, right? As a result of those kind of feelings, right? Like I have to hide things. I have to, you know, just that very first time of, you know, your mom driving to your buddy's house and, you know, just picking up a sack there, you know, kind of thing, all the way up to that moment of, you know, turning yourself in. Right. But that's what it's really about, you know, in terms of like the yoga, right? What is this about? You know, it's kind of about a mind body connection, healing, you know, and heals so much, right? Emotional, mental health, you know, physical, you know, spiritual. And I think that's kind of where, a lot of times we have this disconnect between kind of like the stoner culture a little bit, right? That like we grew up in so much, and then like this like wellness culture that's kind of like you know, growing out of this, right? And whether it be from, you know, the hemp side, and then also this other side, right? So that's like the middle, but then the other side is that stigma, right? Like the stigma stuff where, you know, there's still people who, you know, all they know is that, you know, stoners, oh, they're just lazy. They're just here because they want to get high and they're wasting their time and not really connecting that spiritual aspect, right? Not really connecting that wellness aspect. Totally. But so there's like kind of this thing here all together in that regard that there's this disconnect, right? In that regard, right? So how do you kind of bring that together? It sounds like that's kind of been kind of your mission since you got out a little bit to kind of.
It's like, you know, it's a lot about knowing who you are. You know, when you know who you are, you can stand strong and confident in what you know. right? I know how I feel about cannabis. I know what it does to me. I know what's really going on. I've had experiences that are so mystical and inarticulable that I don't even speak of because they're too grand. And when you have those experiences and you know who you are, then you can stand strong and you can smoke weed and you can say, yeah, I smoke weed. You can walk around smoking weed all day and not being afraid of what other people think about you because you've had enough experience to know how you feel yourself, right? And when you have that conviction, when you have that confidence of knowing who you are and how you feel and what reality is, nobody can phase you. I can't talk you out of what an orange tastes like. Have you ever had an orange? You ever had an orange?
Yeah, once or twice in my life. I don't know.
It tastes just like burnt coffee.
Yeah. Or gym socks sometimes.
Right. It's like, you know, can I convince you of that? Probably not if you've had an orange, right? You know, I can't talk you out of it, but that's your experience. And so, you know, I've been blessed to have so much experience that I know who I am, and few people know who they are because they're hiding from their, you know, like you said, like they're hiding in lies. You know, they can't say who they are because they're afraid somebody will judge them. Right. They can't be honest because they don't want to experience somebody else's feelings towards them because they don't know who they are yet. Right. When you know who you are, you don't care what people think about you. Right. That doesn't matter. You have the proper moral compass and the proper experience. And that's what guides me, not other people's feelings, not other people's opinions. Uh-huh. Right. Because you can't live like that. You've got to live through experience. Only experience can tell you the truth. Only experience will tell you what an orange tastes like. Somebody will never convince you what an orange tastes like. You have got to taste it for yourself. Then you know, right? And so direct experience is the key, man. And I've been blessed to have a lot of it in this game, right? From smoking to hustling to getting pulled over with boxes and packs and, you know, getting stopped at the airport with, you know, a couple hundred K strapped to me and on and on and on. It's like, I've had so much heart racing experiences, man, all for my love of the weed. And I never felt like I was doing anything wrong, right? Ever. I never felt like I was doing anything wrong. I felt like it was the Gestapo out to get me, you know, and I was hiding from bad guys. I wasn't like the bad guy running from good guys. I am the good guy. Don't even kid, right? I'm not holding guns. I'm not shooting people. I'm not jacking people. I'm not a thief. I'm not a liar, right? I have a proper moral compass. And so, you know, I am the example of what joy is and what joy looks like. You know, people see me and they say, oh man, you went on the run. That life must be that your life sucks. Not really. I'm blessed. You know, from the outside, my life may look like a struggle. It might look chaotic, but from my eyes, I am so blessed to have I wouldn't take back one experience. I'm not saying they were all fun. I'm just saying that I learned a lot and I appreciate the experience 2020, right?
No, I love that. I love that. I think, you know, that's something that we lose sight of, and not just individuals, but, you know, as a culture, right? That kind of thought of like, oh man, it seems a struggle. You said it's a struggle, right? Struggle is good, right? Struggle is what makes us stronger in so many ways, right? And I think people look at it as we need, you know, their goal is to just have it easy, right? The easier they have it, then the easier they're going to be happy, right? And it's just not the case, right? I think we're in this human experience, you know, to have growth and to have progress, and you know, it doesn't come from just, you know, chilling out and doing nothing or everything's going smoothly. That's not when you grow, right? You grow through discomfort.
That's right.
So that's these things happen. So having that just shows that you've had a lot of growth in life, you know, and that's the main thing, you know. So it's deep stuff, man. It's really deep stuff. You know,
I feel like I've lived 10 lives, man.
We probably have, in this life and in previous lives, you know.
No, for sure. But even in this one, I mean, I've just had, you know, I spent from 16 to 25 just surfing and selling weed. You know, that's all I did was surf and sell weed for, you know, 10 years. You know, that was a whole whole chapter of just, you know, surfing, selling weed, go to breakfast, go to sushi every night, all day. whole nother chapter, 10 years on the run, you know, running, hustling, man, a lot of good times there. And now I'm in this new chapter of yoga, of growth, of legitimacy. That's, man. And honestly, I can, in hindsight, I can see how it has all culminated and led to this. And it just feels like such justice. It feels like God's justice that I've been, you know, blessed to be put in this position because I've always followed my heart. And here, because I've always followed my heart, even though the judgments of others and society said, oh, you're wrong. Oh, you shouldn't do that. Oh, that's illegal. Society's catching up to where I've already been. Look, weed's going legal now. Well, all of a sudden it's okay now. It didn't change. Their point of view just changed, right? We've already been here. We've been smoking. We've been into it. And now the world's changing and saying, oh, wait, what are they doing over there? They're into weed. What's all that weed about? You know, so I feel so blessed to have followed my heart, even though I had to struggle through the really, you know, the struggle was against the judgment of others and the judgment of society and the law. You know, it wasn't like struggling to dig ditches. You know, it was like struggling to evade the popular point of view, you know, to evade the law, because it was, you know, really the law is unjust in my, you know, by my estimation. And as we see it go legal now, you can just see that, you know, all those people that spent all that time in jail for what, you know, all these people now it's legal and it's okay now, but it wasn't okay then. It's silly, you know? So I just feel blessed that I got to go through it, and it's all timing. Like you couldn't even, you know, you had to be born at that time. You had to live at that time. You can't even go back and hustle pounds anymore. You can't even go back and do runs to Santa Cruz and Bellingham and ship stuff out. It's just, the market's flooded. It's over. Pounds are not 4,800. They're 480.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy, dude. It's not the time to be growing weed. If you're, you know, if you're just getting into growing now, man, that's great, because you don't have to stress about the cops coming to raid you if you're, you know, keeping it tight, but you got to grow 10 times as much just to pay your bills. So it's not like it used to be. It's good peace of mind. And now there's really not that much money in it. So it's a trade-off.
High risk, high reward, right? You know, risking our freedom and everything like that. And, you know, so it's now, you know, everything's regulatory. And like you said, right, everything happens for a reason. And you wouldn't trade anything because it's led us to this point right now, right? And with that one thing, and you start changing this and changing that, and you know how the shit's going to turn out in the end, you know? So I definitely agree with that statement. Now, you know, you've had such a, you know, you've led me a long way here, and you have a lot of great stuff going on, you know, from those places and, you know, those struggles and getting out and turning things around in that regard. And now here we are with Dry Flower, right? So talk to me a little bit about Dry Flower, right? And your revolutionary system, you know, talk to me about what you guys have going on and what makes you guys different from everybody else.
Yeah, man. So Dry Flower, it's really the culmination of my life experience in this game, you know, and it started, you know, with growing and knocking down plants and like, where do we hang this shit? How do you hang it upside down? You know, and evolving, you know, I think I started with string, you know, wire. I was doing baling wire in the beginning, running baling wire up from nails back and forth. And then, you know, I evolved to coat hangers, and really, you know, without going too into the, you know, how the system came about, it's really unique in its functionality, right? Because when you harvest weed up till now, because it's been illegal, you're just on your own. Figure it out. There's no tools you can buy to harvest weed. It's been illegal. And so what people do to harvest weed is whatever their buddy did. Whatever their buddy did, they saw that and they thought, that's cool. I'm gonna upgrade that a little bit. And really, we've, you know, since around 2012, 2014, the industry's really ramped up nets. Like everybody hangs on nets, right? It's like the most common method for hanging hemp and cannabis, because it's got all these, like, you know, ledges that you can keep hanging, you know, branches on, but it's just so inefficient and shitty. I won't even go into it, but, you know, through my experience and in hanging was where I really started to troubleshoot the problems. Like what's the problem with hanging? You know, what are the bottlenecks? What's the sticky points? And there's really, there's just so much to go into, but one of the main ones is is labor. It's like just getting the shit cut and getting it hung and then getting back down. It's not a big deal when you have a plant, but when you've got an acre, you got 10 acres, dude, the traditional method is not legit. So, you know, the hang harvesting system really started to come through me in the yoga studio. As I was teaching and practicing, you know, we'll just step back a second. In 2018, I completely left the legacy market. I sold all my lights. I sold all my equipment. I quit hustling and I opened a yoga studio, right? So I quit the game in 2018 and opened a yoga studio. I stopped hustling, no side hustle, no nothing. All I did was teach yoga for two and a half years. All I did was teach yoga. Well, that's how long the studio was open. For the first year and a half, all I did was teach three classes a day. And in that time, I started to realize and manifest the dry flower hang harvesting system. I started to see the tools. I started to build them in my mind, literally while I was practicing in the studio. I started to fine tune the edges, the corners, a quarter inch, half inch here, half inch there, literally building it in my mind while I was practicing. So one thing led to another, and I realized, you know, I'm going into debt teaching yoga. I'm you know, in debt teaching yoga. I love what I'm doing, but I was guided to do this. I was guided to let go of my whole past and just teach yoga because it was what my heart was guided to do, even though I didn't know where it was going to take me financially, right? It took me in debt, but in that process of teaching yoga, I manifested, I started to create the tools, the system, and in that same process, the investor that came through my studio, my employees came through the studio, everything came to me in that place of yoga, of teaching yoga. And so from there, that's really where I started to build the tools. That's where I got the money to start building the brand and start R&Ding the products, right? So it really came out of the studio, all the whole hang harvesting system, literally. It birthed there. Though all the knowledge and experience was the past 30 years, it all culminated in this tool in that place, in that time, right? So once it came to market, once we really started developing it and I started getting those sales, the feedback was over the top. I mean, I was using it myself. You know, I was R&Ding it myself with friends' crops. And man, I couldn't believe how efficient it was. I mean, you know, here I'm a grower. So I've done all this other stuff. And when I got out of the game, you know, in 2018, I had already filed a patent on another dry system in 2014 on the same kind of stuff on hangers and hardware. And I kind of walked away from it. It wasn't the same system. I walked away from it. I had a falling out with a partner. And then through the yoga studio, this new birthing process happened, a new design, a new style, new applications, you know, just so much started coming through me mentally. I started to really grasp and witness this whole system, you know, and how it was going to function and how it was going to streamline harvest and how it was going to save people time and money. And people couldn't even, and I went on to explain it to people and they couldn't even understand it. Nobody was like, I showed them a hanger and they're like, what the hell is that hanger? What am I going to do with that hanger? Like they were unable to conceive of the system. They couldn't, they just couldn't see what I was seeing yet. You know, so it really took me R&Ding and pushing it on my friends saying, hey, look, let me use this over here. Let me try it. Let me film it. You know, I got so much pushback because, you know, these hangers aren't cheap. It costs money for the system, you know, to outfit somebody's grow. It might be, you know, $5,000 or $10,000, or it might be a couple hundred grand. It might be $3 million to outfit your spot. But if you're outfitting with $3 million, you're probably knocking down $100 million a year. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's all scalable. It's all relative, you know? So it's, yeah, it's just, I don't know where I got on a tangent.
No, I love that. No, it's not. It brings us to the whole dry fit, right? I mean, you know, and I think that's what kind of makes innovation, you know, that's how it comes about, right? You know, you talk about how, you know, everybody kind of doing these things the same way as the last guy taught them and maybe trying something new, a little bit different. And it really takes something from somewhere you wouldn't expect it. Like you were talking about with yoga. Right. Coming from yoga and how this kind of spawned the whole idea and making things better.
Totally.
That's kind of how it happens. Right. I mean, sometimes it seems silly, right. Sometimes innovation seems silly, right. Where it's just like, You know, totally. Look at this dude with rollerblades, right? I mean, all he did was take, you know, roller skates and put them in line and, you know, boom, you know, $1 billion. And that's kind of how a lot of this stuff works. You know, it's not necessarily, you know, just so groundbreaking. It's just a way of like making life easier for everybody. And that's what it's going to do. You know, you send me money, I'm going to give you money, you know, kind of thing. So
no doubt, dude. I mean, it really evolves from ultimately from a coat hanger. Right. Because plastic coat hangers, they move around great. You can hang it. You can move it. It's great. But they're so, you know, loading and unloading plastic hangers sucks. They don't hold that much weight, et cetera. So, you know, anybody that has ever used a plastic hanger, probably one of the first things they thought as soon as they started unloading it was, man, if this end was open, it would be a whole lot easier because you got to pull those, you know, you got to pull the flower out of that center opening, just like when you're taking off a net. And so it takes time to unweave, you know, those flowers through the net, through that hanger. And so it really just evolved from that. And, you know, yeah, it was kind of silly in the beginning. I got so much pushback, man. People were like, that's, you know, they just didn't see what I saw, you know? And it's really like, I can see something, you know, and I've seen something here on this that people haven't seen. And now they're finally coming up to speed with where I've been this whole time. You know, I've got a really cool video that I made, I made these prototypes of my ProPods before I ever made them. I made prototypes out of my business cards, out of my schedules, my yoga studio little paper schedule. I cut them up and I taped them together and I built these ProPods that I visualized and I saw how they're going to work and I saw how you load them and I saw how you forklift them. And I made a little video of paper ProPods way back in, I don't know, 2018 or 2019, whenever I saw it. And now I'm actually living it, dude. The real ProPods. Wait till you see this video. It's just classic, man. I was like visualizing, seeing this, doing it already. And here it is manifested in large scale. I mean, huge scale, like, you know, huge facilities, double stacked, triple stacked with these ProPods. You know, it's just legendary for myself to see this. It's just epic, man. It's so epic to see this visions that I had that I, you know, to now be realized and confirmed and the feedback coming from the market and other growers saying, hell yeah, this shit is gangster fast. It's so epic, you know, so simple and so life-changing. You know, that's really what dry flower hang harvesting systems are. They're so simple and they are so revolutionary. It's ridiculous.
3, 2, 1. Ignition.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis and CBD marketing, branding, SEO content, and web design. If you are a cannabis owner and you know you need an uptick in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us today.
That's the whole thing. And so, you know, like I was saying, you know, making, you save people money, you save people time, you're going to get that money, right? So, you know, changing people's lives in that regard. Now, you know, what's kind of been the biggest challenge that you're facing, you know, with dry flower, you know, kind of, you know, now, maybe in the past, but, you know, especially now in terms of getting things.
It's funny, you know, probably cost, you know, steel prices keep going up, metal going up. It's expensive entry, you know, barrier of entry is high. It costs, you know, could cost you $100,000 to get outfitted. So, you know, the difficulty is really cost. You know, it's an expensive system, though the ROI is there. It's tough to get into to start. My other biggest issue is just visibility. You know, I'm not visible. People don't know I exist, so they don't even have a choice, right? They don't even know that I even exist. So they're just using net because that's what they use. So probably my biggest challenge right now is exposure. I need more exposure. If I had more exposure, then people can make a choice. Because when people actually use this product, they never, ever, ever go back to net. It will never happen. So I need exposure. You know, I need people to know what this is, to see it, to even know it's a choice, right? And then I need to try to get my costs down. I'm trying to scale up right now so that I can bring my costs down, so that I can deliver it cheaper and make it more affordable to people. Because if the price was right, everybody uses this. There is no other option. Once you use this, there is no other option. I don't care, man. I've been growing. This is what I do. I've been doing this my whole life, man. And this is what's up. When you use dry flower hang harvesting systems, you never go back. It's too efficient. It's too easy. It's too functional. It's too fun. I mean, it makes harvest joyful. Literally, it makes it fun. And harvest is such a shit show. It's really not fun pulling bud out of net and breaking flour everywhere and getting crystals in your eyes and all that. It's just and not knowing what to do next and sending labor here to do this. And okay, guys, go over here and do that. And wait, everybody hold off. We got to do this here now. It's a shit show. And so really, you know, I just need exposure to show people how fun it can be and how streamlined it can be and how much more efficient they can be than they are right now. They just don't even know. So that, you know, those are some of my problems I'm running into right now is just letting the world know I exist. You know, that's huge.
Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, obviously, you know, cannabis, we have a lot of regulations and all that fun stuff. And even how we can, you know, bring exposure to ourselves, everything like that. You know, it's not just like, you know, as seen on TV, right? The dry flower.
Totally. Kind of thing, you know? Totally, so, dude. You know, it's like I do all my marketing on Instagram. You know, that's really all. I'm only on Instagram. And they took us down a few months ago. We got our account taken down. We were only up to, you know, 8,000 followers. But in that buildup, I was getting, you know, a message or two a day, inquiries every day for build outs, you know, for systems. And so that was a big hit, you know, losing the Instagram, you know, and I've got another one up. I've got a couple up now and I'm trying to build followers and viewership. But it's a struggle, man. It's a struggle, you know? So that's, you know, I've got to reach out. I got to get more broadcasting out there. I've got to get more, you know, working on this epic brand, you know, dry flower. It's more than just a system. You know, it's like all of our employees, we're all yogis, you know, and as we scale up, you know, I just closed the yoga studio, but we're looking at like reopening the yoga studio again and scaling up, having offices right next door that, so the employees can go right from, you know, working right into the studio. Because we practice daily. That's part of our lifestyle is this yoga. This yoga is transformational. And so really what Dry Flower is, it's a lifestyle company where the employees are all, you know, mostly smoke weed, mostly do yoga, and are optimistic, upbeat people. You know, and the yoga is what's so transformational. That's what makes your employees so capable, so happy, so functional. You know, so what we're really doing is we're building a brand lifestyle and we're showing people like, dude, this is available for you. You can live like this. You can smoke weed. You can do yoga. You can look for God if you're interested. You can feel good. You can be happy. You know, it's possible. Look over here. We're doing it. This is what it looks like. Right. So that's what we, you know, that's what we at Dry Flower are. We're the example. We're trying to be the example of what joy looks like, what happiness looks like as a company, you know, as a brand. You know, we're not a stripper gangster mafia brand. It's not wrong, but that's not us. We're yoga, weed, and family. That's who we are. We, you know, I'm a family man and I'm a smoker and I'm a yogi and that's my life. And I'm seeking God. I'm into enlightenment. Uh-huh. I'm interested in enlightenment. Now that's all I'm interested in.
That's really what we're here to do, right?
I mean, you know what I mean? It's like I'm hustling hangers on the side just to get there and feed my kids.
That's the whole thing. You know, we're here to for bigger purposes, right? And if
no doubt,
you know, obviously we need to pay the bills, we need to move along, and there's no reason why we can't be, you know, have you know, be, prosperity and all that fun stuff.
That's right.
You know, but that's at the same time, what are we here to do? You know, it's I think people get it twisted and they get so caught up in the greed and in the kind of chasing money and stuff. And it's easy to, right? You know, especially when we're in certain places and in life and everything like that, you know, but you've seen all sides of that, I'm sure, you know, and realizing shit, you know, that's all this stuff is temporary, you know,
it is,
you know, so
totally, man, it's dude, you already know, man, it's it is all temporary and the money's good, but ultimately the money, it just makes you feel good. Right. When you know you've got $1 million in the bank, you have that peace of mind that your bills are paid, you got a house to live in and all that, but it's really false security. That can go at any moment. And as soon as that money goes, there goes your peace. There goes your joy. You know, and when you can tap into enlightenment, you need money to eat. Yeah, you need money. But when you tap into enlightenment and you realize God is in control, now your joy doesn't rest in the material kingdom anymore. right? The money comes and goes, and that doesn't affect your happiness. And so really, that's where we want to be. We want to be in a place of joy 24/7. And the money, that gets us there, but it's a false sense of joy. It's a false sense of security, because money comes and goes, man. Yeah. And it can get taken any second. Lights can go out any time, right? So, you know, I don't want to get caught in that. I've chased my money my whole life, but just to eat, not for the passion of the money. You know, I've really been chasing God my whole life. You know, I'm into oneness. I'm into enlightenment. I'm into being the example. I'm into being the light. I'm into being joy. I'm into being happiness. I'm into being the example of what love and light and joy looks like. And that's really what I want, man. That's what I'm all about. And if I got to, you know, hustle hangers to bring the spotlight on me so I can demonstrate that, and I can showcase that, that's the path, man. That's the purpose. That's what's up. And I'm blessed to do it. So
love it. Love it. Now, you know, I want to delve a little bit deeper into that before I let you go, but, you know, we're wrapping up here with Dry Flower a little bit. You know, what can we expect from Dry Flower in the future? You guys, you know, obviously you're changing the game. You have anything else up your sleeve coming down the pike?
Oh man, I've got so many accessories with the hang harvesting system. I've got all metal racks. I've got wooden racks. I've got transport racks. I've got, man, just the catalog is growing, man. We're almost like Snap-on tools for weed. You know, we've got so much stuff coming through the pipeline. It's crazy. And down the road, what do we see? You know, really the next play for Dry Flower is Dry Flower Solutions. And that's where we're going to come out. We're going to harvest your weed for you. We're going to process it. We're going to bucket. We're going to trim it. We're going to bag it. We're going to do all that on large scale application. And there's lots of guys doing it right now. You know, there's lots of, we've got clients that are doing it with our equipment already, but you know, because of my experience in this game and because of my mental, the way I see things, the way I function, you know, nobody's really doing it to my level yet. You know, they're using the right equipment, but the system, you know, and their organization, their workflow, it's just not where I want it. You know, I got to do it myself to get the proper workflow and to really make the most of the hang harvesting system and a service company. I've got to be at the helm so that I can streamline that process, right? And that's really the big play for Dry Flower next is the solution company, where we take our tools and we come to you and we hang harvest, we take the best care of your flower, better care than you can, right? When we harvest your weed, it's going to be top level, top notch. And so people are doing it now, but we would like to bring it to a national scale, you know, a national service that's available, you know, state by state. And a company that you can trust and count on to harvest your flower and know that it's in good hands, because it's a big deal, man. Knocking down your flower, you know, to be honest, I would never let my flower go with somebody else. Don't even kid. I wouldn't even consider it. I'm not going to let some company take my weed. There's no way, dude. No way somebody's cutting my weed and going and drying it for me and processing it. Hell no. Because that's the most fundamental, that's the most crucial part of the whole program. Because if you actually got weed good to that point, there's a lot of fail points that can happen beyond that, right? So if you actually got good weed to that point and you let it go into somebody else's hands, unless it's going with Dry Flower, I'm sorry, but it might be trouble.
Yep, no, for sure. You know, and it's so exciting to hear about that and exciting for the stuff you guys got coming on, for sure. So, and you're an innovator. I'm sure you know all the accessories and a lot of stuff I haven't figured out. So, but definitely before, you know, I let you go, you know, one of my most important things that we get into here is, like you mentioned, right, you know, spirituality and kind of growth and everything like that. So, but a lot of times, right, we liken that with success, right? Or so how do you define success, Jay, you know, whether it be professionally, personally, spiritually, otherwise, right? What is success like for you?
That's a great question, man. For me, success is joy in your heart. Success is the ability and the, you know, is the culmination. Success for me is the ability to walk through life and be in love with the world, right? Be in love with, you know, be in love with your enemy, be in love with the guy that did you wrong, you know, because they don't know better. You know, and if you can get to that place, if you can get to the place where, you know, somebody takes advantage of you, somebody steals from you, and you still have joy in your heart, dude, you won. You are winning, right? Because to me, if you're angry, if you've got to sit in anger, if you've got to sit in bitterness, if you've got to sit in jealousy, if you've got to sit in envy, if you've got to sit in hatred, you're losing. You're failing. I don't care if you have $1 billion in your account. and the world loves you. If you hate people, you are failing and you will suffer and you're going to sit in that misery because it sucks to hate people, dude. It sucks to be angry. It sucks to be right and want to be right when somebody else has done you wrong, you know, and there's no justice there. You'll never get justice there. Right. So for me, success, you know, it's really an internal thing. It's not vaults of money. You know, that might feel good, but what feels good is actually feeling good. Right. So you might have robbed banks to get that vault of money. Now you're sitting on that fear and that, you know, that stress or whatever it is that you're, you know, yeah, you got the money, but what else do you got with it? Right. So that's not success. To me, success is joy in your heart. You know, that's really where it's at. And being a light, you know, being an example, you know, that's, to me, that's success, man. Finding the joy, being an example of what's possible for other people, you know, that's it.
Definitely. And like you mentioned, right, having that hate in your heart, and that's kind of what that'll suck up joy, right? You know, resentment and kind of that built up stuff that so many people suffer from not even realizing, right?
You that's know, right.
Stuff that, you know, wondering why shit is happening to me and why does shit keep happening to me? And it's because of resentment, right? We're attracting this kind of thing. You know, people are attracting this without knowing it. Why? Because they just hate, right? They have these channels of abundance that want to flow down on them, right? And they're blocking that up. They're you know, they're boarding it up, you know, just because they want to be pissed and they want to hold a grudge and they want to win the battle and they want somebody to apologize to them. And, you know, and it just doesn't work in the end. You know what I mean? So
that's right, man. You hear people say everything happens for a reason, you know, something bad happens and like, everything happens for a reason. It all happens for a reason. Right. But when you, those are just words. Okay. When you believe that, you're set free and now you can be joyful. Right. If you know everything happens for a reason, there must be purpose and it must be in your best good. Unless you believe that the world's out to get you and shit, then you live in that reality, right? So, dude, it's all about being joyful. It's all about finding joy in your heart. And when you believe everything happens for a reason, if you believe it, if you know it, if it's real, then you should walk. Then all that pain, all that anger, all that resentment should dissolve literally instantly, and you should be sitting in joy, waiting for the next door to open. You know, but if you say everything happens for a reason, but you walk around angry, then that's just words. It don't mean shit, right? When it means something, you live it and it actually changes how you feel. So it's a fundamental difference of just saying everything happens for a reason and actually living it and knowing it, you know, that knowing changes everything. That lets you walk in peace.
That's it. That's it, man. Love it, dude. Jay, this has been fantastic. Spectacular, dude. It's been that we touched a lot of great stuff here, you know, not just within the industry, not just within the culture. Now we're just in, you know, inspiration background, but also, you know, kind of deep core issues that as human, right. You know, human experience, we all kind of deal with on one level or another. And we all go through in different times and no one's spared from this. You know, we're all in this together for sure, man. So, dude,
no doubt.
You know, as we close here, you know, how can listeners find out more about Dry Flower, connect with you, get your products, all that fun stuff?
Yeah, man. You can go to the website, dryflower.com. That's DRIFLOWER.com. I've got a new Instagram, Dry Flower Solutions, all one word. You can find us there. Dry Flower Systems, IG, got a couple floating around. It's not too hard to find. But yeah, just reach out, hit the DM on the Instagram or hit the website and send a message and we'll get to you and we'll get you a custom build out, man. That's what we do. We talk to growers and, you know, we just suss out what you need, whatever you need. We tell you here's what you're going to need to knock down 100 pounds. You know, you want to knock 100 pounds. Here's what you got. This is what it is. So that's what we do, man. We're all about customer service. We're all about making friends and just hit us up, man. We're friends. We like to hang out and meet more growers, dude, and say what's up.
Love it. Love it, dude. It's been great chatting with you, Jay. I appreciate it. Easy to find, easy to talk to, easy to connect with. So hit them up. I'll get you hooked up with everything you need. So Jay, I appreciate you coming on with me today. And thanks everybody for listening wherever you are. Listen to this podcast. Appreciate all of you as well. So Jay, good luck to you and the rest of the year and beyond.
Thank you, Maynard, dude. It's been awesome. I look forward to chatting again.
Thanks for listening to Dank Discussions. We are so grateful for each and every one of you. Please make sure you subscribe and leave a review. We want to continue making dank content you want to hear, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com. That's grow@calican.com. And follow us on Instagram and Twitter for our latest updates.